You're listening to the Sound Girls podcast with Susan and Becky from Central Florida.
We had such a great conversation last week, talking to A1 broadcast engineer Jerry Palumbo. And we just decided to pick up right where we left off and talk more about some of these great things in sports broadcast. Here's part two with Jerry. I've had quite a few conversations, and even Susan and I had one yesterday. We interviewed somebody, you know, just talking about like more people of color in our industry. Like, where the heck? Why the heck? You know, why are we not hiring more people of color? Why are we not hiring more women? You know, those conversations we've been having forever. But we were talking to the person we interviewed yesterday, just like, instead of the why, what are we doing about it now? You know,
right?
Like, right. We've been talking now for years about the why. So we know some of the whys, and we know not that we shouldn't keep talking about the whys. Obviously we should, but like, right. We know them. We know why they're there. So what are we doing about it to make our industry more inclusive and more diversified, you know? And what can we do, or what can we ask others to do, you know?
Right. And it's not gender specific when it comes to people of color and some of these other issues. You know, I've got friends that are of both genders that are running into the same issue.
Yeah.
So it's that particular part is not gender specific, you know? So I don't know. We just need to keep talking about it and need to keep pushing for change. And because I do think that there's an unconscious bias. We've been hearing that word a lot lately, but I think it's true. I think that people who are doing this don't always know that they are. It's they're just kind of tripping right along. It's par for the course. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, well, no, that's really not acceptable. I mean, joking about these things. Yeah. Look, we've all been on the road. We've all done crazy stuff, right? I think we had this conversation, and once you get to know people and there's a trust there, there's a certain line maybe that between you can cross, but not in mass. And you can't cross certain lines with gender, particularly if you're joking about it all the time.
Right.
Well, that's not really a joke anymore. It's like, you know, people just need to have an open discussion about where those lines are, because for somebody that's delivering that, they might think that the line is movable when it's not.
Right.
I don't know if that made sense. That might not have made sense. But anyway, you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, I know what you're saying. Like,
there's a trust there, and then you know where not to go.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and you teach people how to treat you. So once you get, you know, once you get to that comfort level, people know how to treat each other and where to go in that. And you, like, when you're on the road, and, you know, and you're out there in a truck or in a bus or something with the same people every single day, you learn that and you build that trust, you know, and you know, hey, today we can talk about politics, you know, or whatever, just like you do with your family or whoever, you know. I mean, I have family members who are far right and some who are far left, you know, and I can't talk to some of them about my views, because good God, we'd be arguing all day, but I still love them, you know, and they're still included in my world, and vice versa, you know. We just know, because we have that trust, that we stay away from some subjects, you know.
yeah, and same here, you know. I think that's where we are today politically too. It's like, you know, there's no gray area anymore. It's super black or it's super white. And we need to get back to where we can actually have conversations with members of our families without throwing knives and stuff. It's just a conversation. It's not an accusation. You know what I'm saying?
That should be a bumper sticker, Jerry.
Come on, make it. Conversation, not an accusation. All right, I'm going to write that down. Okay, let's make it. But anyway, you know, we are at a place where people just shut down.
Yeah.
They're shutting people down. But you know what? If you are at, you know, and I thought about this, if you're on the receiving end of some of this behavior for eons and eons and eons, you probably shut down too.
Absolutely.
You probably don't want to come back and have that fight again and again and again and again and again, and maybe one more time, because it never ends, you know?
Yeah.
So.
And I think that's where a lot of our marginalized people are, you know, they've just kind of given up because good God, for 100 years or whatever, you're getting beaten down and beaten down. And your mom's talked about it, and you've talked about it, and grandma's talked about it, and whoever else, you know. And it's like, then why the hell do anything? Because I'm exhausted. Generational exhaustion, even, you know. So I get that. So I guess that's with social media and everything else is what I'm looking at, is everybody's talking now about everything, you know, and all the shit is out. It's everywhere. So all the dirty, all the gross, all the everything, and all the good too, is all out. So
it is.
So we have to steer the direction, you know,
of
everything that's out there, and talk about how to change it instead of just I'm ticked off, or, you know, not that those conversations aren't warranted. They are, you know, like I'm the angry feminist too, you know, like,
but it needs to be a conversation, and a conversation is a two way discussion. It's not one way. And if people shut down when they're trying to listen, listening is half of that. You know what I mean? Yep. So it's a hard conversation. We've all been there, and we've all been there where we're tired of having it too, where we just like, I don't want to hear this again either. And, you know, so I don't know. It's time. I mean, it's out, like you said, it's out there. You know, when you were describing that just now, I just thought of like the grandest steam shower on the planet. It's like, that brings out good and bad. You know, you just, you're suddenly you're sweating, and that could be good or it could be bad, right. You know, could be your meal from yesterday.
I was going to say, I'm actually on a cleanse right now. So I'm feeling all of it right now.
Well, I'm very jealous because I need to have one. And this is my bulletproof coffee, and I'm just now having it. That tells you how, I got up like at 6:30 today, and I haven't even put clothes on properly. So that kind of tells you what kind of day I'm having.
How are you this wide awake and talkative with your first cup of coffee not even gone? I don't even know how you do that.
Because I've been up for 4.5 hours already. That's why. And I'm not quite. I told Eric, who's Eric Zobler. I told Eric, I was like, I need caffeine because I have to be able to concentrate. That's how, because I've been so sleep deprived, you know, I'm carrying all these wacky hours. So I was like, I need to be able to concentrate. So anyway,
one of our questions we ask everybody is, what is your go-to beverage? Would coffee be yours? Or do you have another go-to beverage?
Ed, well, everyone knows that my go-to beverage on the road was matcha green tea latte.
Ooh.
And I call it a nice square wave, a nice long square wave of caffeine buzz, because you don't come up and you don't ramp down quickly. You kind of come up and you maintain that focus for about 5 hours. At least I do, because I'm sensitive. And then you drop off and it's like, what am I going to get down in the next 5 hours? Because the clock is ticking. But I'm hyper by nature. I've got a little, my thyroid likes to run a little happy, shall we say, and you douse a little bit of caffeine on that, and it's like gas and matches. So
how is that trying to contain you in a truck, man?
Well, that actually works to our favor, because that adrenaline is you kind of roll with it, right?
Yeah.
But I would show up. Yeah, I would show up in town, and because I picked up a couple of shows in town while I was in town, of course, you know, I would go over there, and I was like a first fill-in for the Tonight Show for years, and I would show up, and Wendy Rotoli, she would see that green tea latte, right? And she'd go, no, no. Oh, no, because I'd be like a rat on acid. I couldn't get things done fast enough. And in a studio environment like that, things are very slow and stable. And, you know, it's very cookie cutter and everything's set. You just plug and play. I mean, you know, we were interfacing the bands over there, but and doing some of the guest miking, but basically not anything like what we do on the road. So, you know, I'm used to showing up with my green tea latte because we're loading out, or we're striking, or we're doing hard labor that day. And so the green tea, matcha green tea latte. But I've now switched to bulletproof coffee because I feel like I'm trying to be healthier
The green tea latte was always my second caffeine. So like first I'd have coffee, and then like midway through the day, if I'm starting to drag, I don't want a second coffee because then I'm going to get heartburn. So I go for the iced matcha.
Oh,
so good.
Yes. Oh my God. Okay. So here there's a place called Earth Cafe on Melrose. It was not far from where I lived. It's URTH, Earth. And I was a runner at the time, and I would run by there, and it was always packed. And I saw this really foamy green drink with a swan in it. And I was like, what is that? So it's really strong there. So that was my first introduction to matcha, was actually there. And then one of my friends said, you know, they have those at Starbucks. I was like, oh, really? Score. Mm-hmm. But the ones at Starbucks are a lot sweeter. It's a little bit too sweet for me, but it still does the job. It's still good.
Nice.
Yeah.
So I wanted to kind of dive in a little bit and talk about some broadcast audio things, because I don't know how many of our listeners do broadcast audio really, or especially for sports. Like, but that's your main deal, right? Is sports. You've been in sports for years. Do you do all the sports? You just do football, NASCAR? Like, what are your main?
I have done all sports at some point in time. So I started out, you know, accidentally mixing race day, as we mentioned. And and then from there, I went to basketball, college basketball. And then from there, I did football, college, and then NFL, and then NBA. Because basically they're all the same thing. And believe it or not, on some of these college games, there's more setup than there is in some of the pro games. Because there's a lot more tunnel activity. There's a lot more things going on. So I kind of fell into it, and it started just ramping up from there. And then I think I've done bowling, tennis. Bowling was interesting.
I'm curious now.
I forgot how we had, I think we had PZMs going down the side and a bunch of seconds. And I think we had a Sony or something hanging above the pin so we could get the whoosh. But not a lot of that. So what happens is you start bouncing between hockey, and you start finding seasons, and you start rotating around based on the season. So it would be hockey, NBA, then it would be, which overlaps with NFL and college football, and tennis is thrown in there randomly, usually more in the spring, summer, fall months. So, you know, you start to fall into packages much like you would a tour.
Yeah.
You know, somebody says, hey, you want to do this tour with me? And somebody might call and say, hey, you want to do an NFL package with me? Or, I mean, that's kind of how it works. And you end up on a NASCAR package, or you end up on a PGA package. I don't do a lot of PGA, but so it just kind of randomly morphs into whatever. So over time, I started cutting some of those things out. You know, after years and years, I cut out college football and college basketball kind of went away from me. And I kind of veered myself more towards the sports side, I mean, the pro sports side, like the NFL and the NBA. And for a lot of reasons, you know, over time, things change. Normally you have a set day and a shoot day, right? Except for NBA, normally it's the same set shoot day. You show up the same day that you go to air, as you well know, Becky, right? Yeah. You're going to show up early, and you're going to be on air that night. So there's a lot more scramble going on. I started seeing late 90s, probably early 2000s sometime. I started seeing that the set day was taken away from some of the college games, and some of the college stadiums weren't. They're better now, but they weren't wired for broadcast.
Gotcha.
And where the pro stadiums are a lot more plug and play, as you saw in Orlando, they're broadcast ready. So you don't have to run a DT cable all the way from the truck, all the way across, you know, 1500 feet to the other corner of the football field of a stadium you've never seen before.
Right.
So when the set day got taken away from some of that, it was just, you know, I was getting older, you know? So I felt like, you know, I just need to position myself where I feel I can be more adequate with my time, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's a big reason why I changed was just being time sensitive.
About how many channels are you running, like, for, say, a NFL game?
This is an approximate, okay? And it depends on who is running it. Let's say a typical NFL game. I'm going to actually pull up some stats. One of these stats is from my friend Mark Butler, because I asked him about, I used to do Thursday Night Football the first few years that they went out on the road.
Okay.
It's a huge show, and it's even bigger now, and he actually does that now. So let's break down the NFL, for example. You have your A game, which has everything going on. That's your national broadcast, right? You're probably going to have more cameras. You're going to have more audio. Then you have your C and D, E games, sometimes F. I don't know how far they go now, but they have less audio on it. They're more regionally broadcast. That might be somebody that's not ranked as high as, let's say, the Patriots or the Cowboys or whatever. So you're not going to put out as much for that because you don't have as big of an audience. The budgets are smaller.
Right.
You know, you can kind of go crazy capturing audio. But a typical day for a typical NFL gig could be anywhere from 45 to 50 channels to 80 channels of audio.
Okay.
That's just a typical game. And I think I asked Mark on, let me see how many channels he used for Thursday Night Football. 168.
Wow.
I was asking him this stat because I was trying to compare the big shows to a typical show. And some of these things, the reason there's such a wide disparity is because you've got a set on the field with four or five talking heads and usually have backups to that and RF. Mm-hmm. You have roaming reporters on these. You also have a set that's outside of that, but an awful lot of what these channels are is effects and things that are coming in from other sources. And they could actually be coming incoming channels from a remote site. Like, I don't know this, and I can't speak for him on this because we didn't really get into that and talk about it. But let's say he's in the truck, and he's doing the field audio, and he's doing the outside stage audio, and they might be tossing to a conference center on South Beach, right?
Yeah.
He might be taking that audio in too. So there could be 10 channels. There could be two channels. There could be just a stereo coming in. It could be, it just depends on what he wants.
Right.
So that audio could be a combination of all those things. I never did break it down with him. I just asked him that out of curiosity because I had noticed that when I had come back, I came back in and worked with him on a game. It had gotten so much larger than it was when I first went out, you know, 10, 12 years ago with that crew. So I was just curious. So typically, you know, you can go out and do an NFL game and use the CCUs of the camera. That's where you can go on the camera inputs. So you're not having to put out extra audio.
Right.
Most people will do that for crowd. So you mm-hmm. can shoot across the stadium. So you can cut down some that way. But most of that's effects. Most of those channels are effects that you're hearing on the field and around the stadium.
Do you have like an effects generator or something that you bring in for clapping and crowd stuff, or do you mic all the crowds?
You mic all the crowds.
That's awesome.
See, so people, you have all of that stuff on a DigiCard if you ever wanted to use it, but we do not do that. You want to capture the feeling live.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting because when you're in the truck, you have a certain way you want to mix things according to your taste because audio is subjective. Mm-hmm. But it's really nice when you come out of the truck and you're A2 for these people or you're RF for these people and you see all these different ways that people like to capture their audio, which is totally different. Like some people will put mics up high on the high cameras in the stadium and shoot them straight across so they get this big wide range of sound for their crowd. Others like to actually put the mics on poles high and shoot them left, right, up into the crowd this way, mm-hmm. right? So you're actually getting a closer proximity of the crowd, but you still got a dispersed audience sound.
Uh-huh.
So it really depends on what you're looking. I actually know 182 that actually shot into the crowd, and then he wanted me to take another set of stereo mics and shoot them down along the line where the cheerleaders were. And I was like, well, I thought that was an accident on my part when I looked at the paperwork. And I was like, do you really want them shooting down like that? He goes, I do, because there's going to be times I want to cut and I want to hear what the cheerleaders are saying and doing. Now, you can get that on the handheld camera because they also have mics on them too. So wherever they're shooting, you're going to get it.
Right.
But it was just a real interesting way that he set up his NFL, because he was getting a really good fat wide crowd sound, but he was also cutting to the sideline if he wanted it away from the cameras. So I thought that was an interesting concept.
That is interesting. I've for years kind of noticed like when camera or when football switched over to 5.1, I got super excited because sitting in my living room, it was like I felt like I was there, and there was like a crowd behind me all of a sudden. And I was like, this is awesome, you know, but I've noticed like little things like that. Like you were saying, when they switched to the sideline, you know, sound, I was like, oh, that's cool. It's like I'm right on the field.
Yeah, like, and everyone does their 5.1 a little bit differently. It's like some people want the quarterback behind them. Mm-hmm. Some people want the quarterback in front of them. Most of the time you got your announcers over here. So it really depends, again, objectively on what the A1 is trying to achieve with their 5.1 mix. And mostly you got crowd and effects and stuff going on around you. But there's, you know, there's been some really unique the A1s out there that have really tried some really cool, tricky stuff that I would never, ever think about doing. And I love to mention people's names, but I've also gotten spanked for mentioning people's names, because sometimes people don't want their names mentioned. I believe sharing the love, man. You know, if I learned something grand off of somebody.
Yeah.
I want to, they should have the accolades for that, because I might have learned that from them, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. And then some people don't want their name out there. But there's a mixer out of Miami, south of the Miami area, who notoriously does things left of center. And when I say left of center, he does not do things cookie cutter like everybody else. And I keep telling him, I said, you have such an amazing, unique style to A1 mixing that you bring to the table that is so diverse and different from everything else I've seen. And he's like, I'm not any different than any of the other ones out there. But I'm like, yes, you are, because I get to see it. You know, if I come out of the truck, I get to see what these people are doing. And he's just got a really unique approach to everything. Like, for example, on your shotgun mics, you know, really technically those shotgun mics are picking up from the sides, right?
Right.
Wait, 99.9999% of everyone that puts their shotgun mics out, on, particularly on the hard cameras on the end zones, 99.9% of the time, that camera mic is going to be on top. It could be still sideways, but it's going to be on top of the camera like this with a bungee on it.
Yeah.
Look, next time you see it, it's going to be coming off the end. He puts it on the side. He shoots it off on the side.
Interesting.
He actually puts it over here. And I was like, wow. He said, well, that's really technically how they're designed to be used. So he really, and he's got an EE degree anyway, so he really thinks more sideways, but in a very, very creative way. And I tell you, his mixes sound absolutely astronomical. I did in Miami Sugar Bowl with him. I was on the broadcast side. He did the halftime where we have bands. That's where you have marching bands.
Mm-hmm.
I have never heard a band sound better. Ever.
Nice.
Yeah. And it's just all what he does, you know, but that's the creative part of being a mixer.
I was just going to ask, is that up to the A1? Like,
yes,
that's great. So you get to be the designer and the creative part behind your mixing, which is really cool. I mean, it's like everything else. I'm glad that broadcast allows you to be creative that way.
Yeah. Unless something's not working, you know,
right.
Unless they come back and say, I don't like the way that sounds. you know, but for the most part, they leave the A1s alone, you know, to come up with a creative palette. It's a really beautiful thing.
That's great.
God, man, there's so many people. There's like 20 people. I just want to go down the list and go, you know, this guy's his crowd. I would emulate this guy's crowd because I like the way he places his mics out here. Mm-hmm. I would do everything that this guy's doing because he's thinking out of the box. And I find that enticing anyway. So, but I don't want to get in trouble for, you know, putting names out there if they don't want their names out there.
I'll drop a name because we interviewed Andrew Stokely, and he's coming up after your interview, and he does a lot of ice hockey, and some of the stuff he has that he talks about, like, I was blown away. Like, ice hockey and how to mic it is just floors me.
And hockey is one of the most fun. You know, there's a range of hockey is the most fun to mix too, because you're busy. You know, you're always chasing that ice, and it's fast, and you're busy, and you're not bored. Whereas, you know, something like baseball, you're trying to stay focused. You know what I'm saying? Basketball can sometimes be that way, but hockey's amazing. I want to hear his podcast, actually.
You'll hear it. It's coming out after yours.
Awesome. But yeah, see, I like to mention people because I think that these people have been game changers out there doing stuff. And, you know, I'm trying to be sensitive. I want to give everyone the accolades out there, but I don't want to get anyone angry at me and goes, I really don't want my name out there. I don't want my name out there.
No worries. We'll start chasing them down somehow.
I would love that, actually.
That's cool. Yeah, I want to talk to more broadcast people because I feel like you guys are kind of the dark horse of audio a lot of times, you know, like people don't think about you and you hide in these little trucks all over the place. But the majority of people are listening and watching what you do.
Yeah. And you can't think about that. I think we mentioned that before, is that you can't psych yourself out about that. But, you know, I think the first time you go out into a really large arena show, you think about that. And then, then later you just think about sound on stage and how it sounds in the arena. You start to weed out that kind of stuff. You know, you're just focused on the job right there in front of you. That's
probably
the thing.
I mean, you sports people have more viewers than, or, you know, people who are listening to your mix than anybody else, like literally millions more.
Yeah, probably. Oh, sure. But you don't think of that. And, you know, and unless something goes wrong, then everyone's an A1, right? Like, when things go wrong, everyone's like, oh, somebody's going to get fired. Oh, my God. That, you know, that's their last gig. Da, 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 da. But for the most part, seriously, when you're watching a game, unless you're audio like we are and you're really into the game, particularly if it's a playoff, do you really think about audio unless something happens? You don't really even think about it. Yeah. You don't pay any attention to it unless it's not there.
Right.
Yeah.
Right?
So even though there's millions of people that are really listening to your work, 90% of them are glued more to the action than they are to the audio, unless something goes wrong.
How many times when you think, like, or when someone says, like, oh, that person's going to be fired, how many times are they actually fired? My students say all the time. They're like, oh, that person's going to get fired. And I'm like,
Like we mentioned before, if that were the case, there would be lots of available positions, as
right.
Okay. There's so much that can go wrong, and often does, that sometimes that it's when it's explained away, like, it, you know, you can lose, you know, a channel transmission. It has nothing to do with the mixer, but it has a profound effect on the home audience. Not that often, actually. Not that often.
So what I was going to say actually comes right after this. So I can think of one specific instance during a Super Bowl where it looked like all hell broke loose in your world and all of us were sitting at home in the dark.
Are you talking about when they lost the half of the stadium?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Let me tell you what happened there.
Yeah. I want to know.
I was not on that. I was not on that gig. So, but my... A good friend of mine was the EVP of the Super Bowl planning. Okay. Plus I talked to all the, my friends that were there.
Sure.
So here's basically what happened. So it's a superdome, right? So they it went through Katrina and had been rewired and da da da.
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
Oftentimes, as you know, Becky, when you show up at an NBA game, you have a generator that's there with the truck, so it's on truck power. Truck's got its own power,
yep.
And then you have house power, which is the house. So you build your booth upstairs, you plug into the wall, and that's house power, right? Mm-hmm. And then you run down fiber to the truck, which is on separate power, right? Okay. The field, which actually was closer to the truck, was on truck power, right? So what happened was half of the stadium, the house itself, half of the stadium lost its house power. So the house power went down in half of the stadium, which included the broadcast booths. So anybody that was in the broadcast booths that was on house power went down. But that's why the people on the field that were on a separate power source in the house were still able to communicate during that 30 minutes or whatever was going on. So there was a house power failure, and I don't understand the backup mechanism for the house. You know, for the trucks, we have generators, and sometimes we have a backup generator. Sure. So we have plan A and B usually. I don't know in the case of the Superdome what their backup options were for the house. So the house lost power. That's why you had half that broadcast down and the other half up. And the biggest part that was down was affecting part of, I think, if I remember right, part of the Jumbotron on that side.
Yep.
And some of the electronics that were actually physically running the stadium itself, of course. And then anything that was on house power, which were the booths at that time, lost local power.
Yeah. So, I just remember watching it, and that was one of the thoughts I had, was like, oh, someone's going to lose their job. But I could see everybody kind of scrambling around on the, you know, what you could see on TV. You could kind of see like A2s and stuff running all over, and I'm like, these poor guys. Like, oh, my heart was sinking. Like, oh, I felt so awful for all of you, because, you know, at that time, everybody just starts yelling and screaming. But if you don't have power, you probably don't have comms, so that might have been even better.
Right. I'm sure that there was part of those comms were probably dead. Yeah. So I was watching that in utter horror, only knowing what it's like to be in a situation when things go down. I'm trying to think. There was a Sugar Bowl, actually, that we had in Miami. Was it Miami? No. Where was it? It was the Orange Bowl. Of course, it was the Orange Bowl.
Oh, yeah.
And this was about 10 years ago, 10 or 12 years ago. And we had everything was actually on truck power in this particular situation. I think this is what happened. And one of our generators went down.
Oh, no.
And we had local. I think this was a situation where we had local power and not. I'd have to think about this. But anyway, we lost a portion of the comms from the truck, but we had other things. So the announcers couldn't communicate to the truck, but we were hot. And I remember it was Kenny Albert and he was such a pro. And I remember Kenny turned around and looking, he's like, I just lost everybody. But we had communication, and we were able to tell him to just keep going while they switched to a backup generator.
Wow.
But but it's been so long ago, I can't remember exactly what the stats were of that. But they were ultimate pros that they were able to just trudge through, because, you know, everyone turns around, looks, and goes, there's sheer panic.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's like, I just lost the entire truck in my head. I just lost everything. And he couldn't hear himself. And but somehow they could hear in the other direction. I can't remember what was going on with that, but that was another one of those dicey situations where.
What's your favorite memory so far, or favorite event you've done so far? Do you have one? You probably have a few.
You know, anytime you do a big playoff, like a World Series or a Super Bowl or something. That's kind of the pinnacle of where you want to be. Yeah. And yes, they're wonderful and they're exciting, and it's, you pinch yourself to be there and you're lucky to be there. But I think that some of the favorite things that I've done weren't necessarily sports related. I mean, burying my face in a Stanley Cup was pretty sick during the Stanley
Cup. I saw that picture. What did you drink out of the Stanley Cup?
Oh, I had champagne in it.
Yes.
I had champagne in it. And this was just, we were the last one striking. We were like four or five people left, and they invited us up during the Stanley Cup playoff. And it went to like seven games and a bunch of triple overtime. It was ridiculous. We were ready to get out of there. But because, you know, we were hanging around partying and celebrating this win, we had to go into the facility to use the bathroom. That's really how this came down. And the players that were having their party up in the,
who was in the team that won that year?
That was the Hurricanes. I think it was the Hurricanes and the Red Wings. I'd have to look, but it was the Hurricanes that won. So,
I was going to say it was the team that beat the Red Wings, which is my team. I know that.
I said, yeah, well, then you know how crazy that playoff was.
That was crazy. Yeah.
So, yeah, that was like, I mean, you know, my brother saw that and freaked out. He's a big sports fan, and he went, there are players that haven't had their faces in that thing.
Yeah.
You know, which is, how crazy is that? So that's a pinnacle. But I have to tell you that probably the proudest that I was of a show. Again, you answer the call and you say yes. I mean, you think it's going to be a puny little thing. This was a show called Songs of the Mountains. It's a bluegrass show, came out live from the Marion, Virginia, and it was on PBS. I was the A1. You show up, and it started out what looked to be simple. And I was in a little bread truck with, I think, either an Allen and Heath or a little Soundcraft. So this is like in the early 2000s. Yeah, so we're really pushing technology limits here. But this was traditional bluegrass, and the instruments could not be mic'd. Okay. So
gotcha.
So they had to come up. We were using a 414 because of the attenuation, and you can change the widths on that. The pattern's all over the place. So we had two 414s, and there would be these bluegrass bands, and they had to come up, and we had to stage them physically. And we had to move them around. Like, we'd have to get the violin player off of, you know, the banjo, or, you know, due to frequencies, so that when they would step in, I would have them placed away from each other, even though they might be playing beside each other. Because when you think about EQ, you're trying to get the same frequencies off each other through panning, right?
Yeah. Yep.
So what we were doing was we were using their physical bodies for our panning. So we would,
we would
move them in different locations, and we would strike the floor for them to hit their spots for their solo. We'd go through one round of rehearsal, and then we would tape it live. And I would be on the EQs like our faders. So every time somebody would come up, Becky, you guys, Susan, I'd be bumping up the highs on the violin when he come up, and then I'd be racking it down, and then I'd be working on this EQ. So I was riding my EQs like we would a fader, and I was monstrously busy from the time we started to the time we ended.
That sounds so much fun.
So much fun, because it was so creative, and we had to think outside of the normal. You know, it's easy to mic all that stuff and control it the traditional way.
Yeah.
But we couldn't do it that way. They wanted to keep it traditional. So it was, that really pushed my limits when it came to mixing in it. And we ended up winning a telly for that show because of the audio. So I, you know, so that ranks for me one of the top. And of course, doing the thing with Elon, the Model 3 rollout, which was, yeah, another simple yes of doing comms, another simple gig, but it was the pinnacle for me for somebody who's changing the world that we live in. So, yeah. You know, but yes, all of the big shows are wonderful, and it's an honor to ever go to any of them. If I never do it again, I've been the luckiest girl in the world, you know?
That's awesome. I can't wait to be in one of them someday.
Your time's coming. You're scratching at that door, girlfriend.
I'm going to knock it down here eventually.
Yes, you will. Whenever I did sports, it was for UCF football. So I've never really done anything else. And as a totally non-sports person, I just... Do you have to know how these things work for every event? Like, because you work with all these different kinds of sports, do you have to know, like, the intricacies of any of them? Or is it okay just to have, like, a basic knowledge?
It's okay to have a basic knowledge. I mean, at the end of the day, it's really audio and it's all logical signal flow. So mm-hmm. the basic knowledge, all that's required, and a desire for the audio is all that's required. I happen to be a sports fan.
Yeah.
In general. And it helps to know the game mm-hmm. and know ahead of time what you would want to capture because you know the game, but it's gotcha. Not required. It's not required at all. Knowledge audio.
Some yeah. of one of my colleagues at Full Sail is he was a director for golf and ESPN and stuff like that, video director. So I asked him the same thing. I'm like, so do you know all of these sports? He's like, you know, I'm working this like lacrosse event and I don't know anything about lacrosse. So I need to look some things up. And I was like, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, for some of those, yeah. like I have basic knowledge, but hockey is not a Florida thing. I have no clue what you, what you need for that.
Well, I had to do the baptism by fire for hockey, too, because it's not a Southern sport.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and the first time I went in there, I had to rely on my A2s who are phenomenal at hockey. They do tons of hockey. So this is where you rely on the people who really know where the placements are and what you're getting. And then once you get it, you go, oh, that's why we put things there, because you're trying to mm-hmm. capture, you know, the ice or yeah. the mm-hmm. sticks or whatever. So you don't always have to know. I think it helps. You know, mm-hmm. I love NFL. So, for example, I am a big NFL fan. Everyone used to come to my house for Monday Night Football. Everyone in town would all show up at the Palumbo household to watch Monday Night Football. So even though I love to mix, I have to be honest with you. My favorite position in NFL, if I'm not mixing, I like to be on that field. I like to be on that field and I like to, I'll be somewhere around the red hat, green hat, and I'll be right there listening to, the coaches in real time. Mm-hmm. I want to hear what they're planning. I want to hear that the guys getting fired up or disappointed, or I want to hear what the plan is. And to me, that's the most exciting part. I don't have to be mixing it.
It's very exciting to be on the sidelines, even if I have no idea what's going on. It's still so like there's that energy, you know, and it's really a lot more fun than a lot of other events I've done.
There is an energy and it's dangerous too. I can't tell you how many times I've almost a football to the face or been,
or run out of the way of the camera guys. Cause
I was going
like,
to say, you got to watch where that 6'5", 300-pound dude's running.
Yeah, don't care.
They're going to go right over you.
I have a scar on my nose from this has happened twice. And it's the real dangerous part is in Major League Baseball on first base. If you're in the dugout, which goes down towards first base and they mm-hmm. miss, especially if they're throwing from second to first and they miss, it's going to either hit the camera guy, girl, I got to be correct here, or it's going to fly into that dugout, or it's going to hit, you know what I'm saying? I have a slice on the side of my nose where I got hit with a baseball.
Oh my gosh. In
Major League Baseball, you know.
That's like 90 miles an hour, man. Those things hurt.
Yeah.
it hit my glasses and the glasses cut my face. But anyway, yeah, I mean, it's exciting because you're in the action. So to me, mm-hmm. you don't have to always be mixing. Sometimes it's more exciting to not be in the truck where you're kind of stuck a little bit. You know, I said earlier, you got to kind of pick, you know, I might've been on another podcast or an interview where somebody asked what was the favorite position to do. And I was like, well, it really depends on that day. If you are a people person, you might want to be a booth aide too. If you're really into people and you're good at making people comfortable and you're good at troubleshooting on your feet outside of the truck, that might be the perfect place for you. If you're an adrenaline junkie, some people can't stand that. You know, they're not people. You know, they might not want to be in the booth, you know, and having to deal with talent, which for the most part, there's only a few that you have to handhold, but for the most part, you take care of them. They're great, you know? So it really depends on my mood, on what I like to do. Sometimes I really dig RF. You're away from everybody, but you still have enough meat and potatoes of troubleshooting going on to make it worth your while. And then the field, of course, is to me, hands-on excitement.
That's awesome. I love all of it. I want to try to do all of it at some point. I just think it'd be so much fun. But so I got a last question for you. Who's your NFL team?
Oh, I have to go with Carolina Panthers. I'm sorry. I have to. And I'll tell you why, because I started doing NFL at the inception of that team.
There you go.
Like in 96. So
good team.
So I have to always go back to the homeboys, because that's really where I cut my teeth doing NFL to begin with. So
I was going to say, I'm still a hometown girl myself, and I root for the worst team in the NFL. Well, not the worst, but we're pretty close. I'm a Detroit Lions fan.
Oh, okay.
I'm one of the rare few that are still around.
I have another friend that still goes to those games. So there's at least two of you.
I was going to say, born and bred in Michigan, I can't get it out of my system. So I want to see them win something someday.
I went to a game where they won.
They win on occasion. One time.
You know what? But that's a true fan. A true fan sticks with their team through thick and thin. And, you know, you're not always going to be a 10-year winner. It's just not always going to be that way, you know. But I'm really loyal, and I go back now and I see people there that are getting little gray in their beards, and my hair is turning, and and we're changing, and we were all just so young, you know, and we're still family. And it's kind of nice to go back and go, you know, a lot of great stuff started here.
I do like that about sports. It has that legacy, and, you know, I think even in the broadcast world of sports, you guys have a pretty big legacy, you know, of people teams that have worked in this truck and that production for a long time. And I'm liking the idea that new kids are coming up and new people are jumping in the trucks and learning new stuff too. I think that's really cool, because sports lives on, you know.
I think it's important to pass the baton to the younger generation, because you're not always going to be. You know what I'm saying? That there are legacy mixers that have been out there as long as I've been doing it. Some of the same guys are still in the same positions, and they should be, because they're at the top of their game. Until they're ready to do something else, or till any of us are ready to do something else, they should, in fact, be where they are right now. Anyway, the big ones like Eddie and Freddie and Wendell and those guys, you know, they deserve to be exactly where they are. And they're far from finished as far as still creating their own legacies. But yeah, these opportunities, I'm seeing young guys. I saw a guy from St. Louis a couple years ago that was just rocking it. And I was like, you know, he's going to be a superstar one day. He's a young guy in his 20s, just killing it.
That's awesome.
So they're coming. Yeah.
I'm excited to see that and see more women in that field too, and more people of color and just everybody and the broadcast industry open up, you know, a little bit more. And I think people like you are making a way for that to happen, and we appreciate you.
Well, thank you so much, and we appreciate you. We appreciate Sound Girls you know, we just do the best that we can to try to make it better for the next generation of women. Absolutely. And people of color and the youngsters that are coming up. But thank you for saying that. We're trying. We're trying.
Thank you, Jerry. We appreciate you.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Susan.
Thank you for listening to the Sound Girls podcast. You can find out more information on the website, soundgirls.org.